Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hello, and welcome to the show. Today is Monday, September the 3rd, 2018. This is Labor Day, and we're glad that you joined us. It's a lighter group. I guess everybody's out doing family things, but we welcome you to the show. We're glad you're here. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here to engage in this conversation. Once again, the next layer, the next level, looking into first century Aramaic forgiveness. Our Course in Miracles lessons today are 244, 5, and 6. And, of course, we're doing these lessons to cover a year of A Course in Miracles and to simply not in depth go over each of the lessons, but to get the general idea of each lesson in the Course as it unfolds for the year. We do have two or three videos available on our website, www.whyagain.org. There are several video links to different Course in Miracles pieces of the work I've done in Course in Miracles in our archives our YouTube channel. And you can find that by going to the website, whyagain.org. And over on the right hand side, you'll see the social media links. The bottom one is YouTube. Or you can just go to YouTube and type in Michael Rice, and you'll find, I'm not even sure, over 100 videos or so with several of them focused on A Course in Miracles. So our lesson 244 today is the acknowledgement. And, you know, one of the things we've discovered in our work with the laws of living is a thing that we call regulatory speech, and recognizing that our speech is what regulates or organizes literally our cellular structures, our feelings, our thoughts, and the creative impulse that we set up in the world. And so when we speak language out of avoidance, we tend to gravitate which we avoid. So there are several places in the Course that do not seem to recognize that idea. So we point it out and do some correction there or some shift in the idea. So the focus here, the key thought in lesson 244 is I'm in danger nowhere in the world. And of course, if you follow the idea of regulatory speech, frequency sets up energy that draws experiences. If I speak of danger, then I tend to focus or draw danger. So we would shift that thought into I am safe everywhere in the world that I go. When I, you know, there's a powerful scriptural idea that says, and it's the Creator speaking to humans, says, you can walk, if you're in harmony with me, you can walk through a battlefield where 1,000 or 10,000 will die, and you can't be touched. If you want to see a really practical example of that, literally, true story, watch the movie Hacksaw Ridge. And you watch this young man who signs up for military service because everybody, all the young men in his community are going off to war back in World War II. I believe it was World War II. I might be mistaken. It might have been one, but whichever one it was, there's a battle in Hacksaw Ridge. This young man refuses to touch a weapon, and his commitment is to go to battle, to go to war, in order to save lives, in order to put people's lives back together. And incidentally, it doesn't matter if his own men's lives or those of the Japanese that he confronts that are injured. He offers love and support to everybody. Pretty unusual for a human life. In any event, real story, real true story, and you get to see this guy sitting in the battlefield. It's very powerfully depicted. If you haven't seen the film, take worksheets, be ready to breathe. There's some pretty gross war scenes in it. But he sits while all of the tough guys who have as their motto, supposedly, no man left behind, and they all run off and leave men on the battlefield, and he literally, single-handedly, as well, let me step back a bit. Those who ran off the battlefield were ordered off of the battlefield because they just could not. They were being overwhelmed by the Japanese on Hacksaw Ridge. And when they get down off the ridge, they call in their battleship support, and the battleship offshore starts firing these, I don't know, 16-inch guns. I mean, just fire and hell everywhere. But this young man stays on the ridge. He says, God, tell me what to do. Tell me where to go. And it's pretty powerful because you watch him listening. And, you know, he's not getting a response in the way, you know, many people say, well, God, you're supposed to tell me this. And you know, a voice is to boom out of the sky. Well, there's no voice booming out of the sky. And he kind of sits there in confusion. And then he gets it as he sits in that quiet space after asking for guidance, and he hears a wounded man moan, and he heads in that man's direction, gets him and drags him over to the edge of the ridge, which is a cliff, I don't know, a couple of hundred feet, and literally lowers him down with a rope. As all the tough guys with their tough talk, who literally, because he wouldn't touch a gun, almost beat him to death earlier, none of them will go up on the ridge with him. They see person after person, injured person after injured person being lowered down up the ridge. Not one of them has got the guts to go up there with all their tough talk and how they're going to beat him up because he will be the death of them. He ends up saving the lives of most of those who beat on him. It's a pretty interesting portrayal, but the most interesting one in regard to this particular idea is to watch how he is guided through the enemy lines, through just incredible odds, and literally, personally, single-handedly pulls 75 men off the ridge. Well, this area that he's in is being shelled, just bombed to the nines. I mean, just a literal inferno. And, you know, you watch something like that, one of the benefits of the fact that we've got films and, you know, there's a lot of destructive aspects to what's been shown to kids, but this is one piece that really shows the power of living in harmony with the active presence of love and refusing, no matter what happens, to buy into hostility and fear. And you watch this young man, and he has, after signing up and wanting to go and support the war effort, he has so much to deal with, so many attacks, because he won't pick up a gun. They almost court-martial him. Literally, they're going to send to Leavenworth for the duration of the war. And he's like, no, I won't pick up a gun. No, I won't resign. No, I won't go home. I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. Powerful. Powerful to watch. Powerful to watch the intuition as it operates in his life. So this principle is a true one. And the way that danger comes to me is that I hold danger within my mind. So the lesson proceeds and says, your son or daughter is safe wherever he may be. You are there with him. In other words, it's saying to the Creator, I realize that wherever I am in a space of safety. And if it seems something different, I call upon your name and I will remember that safety and the presence of love for that. Living in that presence of love and being attuned to that presence of love is our safety. They are one. How can one fear or doubt or fail to know that he cannot suffer or be endangered or experience unhappiness when he belongs to the Creator, to love, to loving, and held in the safety of that presence of love? And when you realize that, you know, when the scriptures talk about in him we live, move, and have our being, talking about this unfathomable force, whatever you choose to call it, called the Creator, and that literally we live in that the definition of that energy is love, and that we live held in that 24/7, 365. And unless you have a different idea, nothing else can approach it. Now, if you've been told what trash you are and how much of a sinner you are and how one day you're going to go to hell because of what, you know, because you disobeyed what some preacher said, then surely you are going to draw to yourself someone who will play that hell out with you. And it will become your experience, no question about it. And that's because people have used fear to reinforce and to try to inspire people to stay connected to love. And they don't really realize that they're saying or that they're trying to get people to stay connected to love. They think that they're trying to please some deity that's really peeved at just about everybody for just about everything that they do. And so the person who buys into that danger game of condemnation then literally sets themselves up. Point of view of their own self-image, oh, this is what I deserve. And then when they receive the abuse, they live in the space of, oh, well, I deserve it, so I'll just accept it. And sadly, those ideas were implanted oftentimes by our so-called religions. So to recognize who you are and to experience that you live, move, and have your being, to bypass all of the thousands of generations that have bought something different, the genetic inclinations within us to think that we are condemned, that we are going to be traumatized, is what leads to that condemnation and trauma. It's all an inside job. And so the lesson goes on to say, and there we are in the truth. Storms bypass us, present love. For what can come to threaten the Creator or make afraid what forever will be a part of the Creator? So to recognize that you are an extension of the Creator, and as an extension of the Creator, you live, unless you've got a different, now if you choose to create something different, you're welcome to do it, but you hold the attributes of the Creator and therefore can only attract those things. Unless you have a different idea. And then you can turn your creative will over to any kind of insanity that you choose. And lesson 245, and we have shifted wherever we're seeing the word peace, we're recognizing that the Aramaic word translates, that has been translated by most people from the scriptures, the Aramaic word is serenity. It's not peace. So the acknowledgement that your peace is with me, I am safe. So to recognize that, and it's a matter of, you know, what are we attuned to? And to get an idea of what that means, you know, you might remember one day you were sitting listening to your AM radio. It was getting to be dusk and moving into dark, and you'd been listening for a couple of hours. And then all of a sudden, another station boomed in on top of it. You were maybe listening to your nice, quiet FM, your nice, quiet quality music. And all of a sudden, this raunchy noise breaks in on top of it. And another radio station took over the instrument called your radio. So the radio expresses whatever it's attuned to. So it's attuned to 900 on the dial. But when you get near dusk, atmospheric conditions cause energy signals to bounce around a little bit, and all of a sudden 1010 comes in that wouldn't normally come into your station, or another station attuned to 900 that comes from maybe 1,000 miles away. All of a sudden the atmospheric conditions right and it bounces in, and it takes over the expression of the radio. And you find yourself flipping back and forth. The radio, you get your nice, quiet, quality music. Then you get this rock and roll noise. You get your nice quality. And that's how this attunement process works. Or you might remember that, you know, every morning when you go to work, you're listening to your nice, quiet FM music. But there's one corner that you hit on the way to work. You know, if you've got a five-mile drive at about the two-and-a-half-mile mark, you pass this one corner, and all of a sudden, something happens every morning. And your nice, quiet FM music is taken over by rock and roll noise. What happened? Well, the first 2.5 miles of driving toward the office, your signal was attuned to the particular quiet station you're listening to, because, and let's just pick a number, I'm not saying this is literal, but let's imagine that 51% signal strength controls the FM radio. It's not true with AM. It can flip back and forth, in and out. And two stations can override each other on the AM. But on the FM, they have a gating mechanism that works a little differently. So you're listening to your nice, quiet music, and it's 51% signal strength, but at that corner that you hit every morning when things change, you're driving far enough away from the station you're listening to that its signal strength drops to 49. And the signal strength of another station comes in at 51, and all of a sudden this station's changed place. Well, that's exactly what happens when we do this work of forgiveness. If we're living out of the space of a non-being self, you remember Yeshua said, in order for you to live, you've got to die. Much sense if you think, well, gee, I have to go put a bullet to cancel the thought in my brain in order to live. I mean, what sense does that make? But what he's saying is that there's the truth of who you are. Pardon me. There is the created self called love. Hold a newborn to get experience of that. And then there's what we call the non-being self. The self is based in hostility or fear. So if through resonance, you know, let's say you've been spending time every day meditating. I know that everybody who's doing this work has this experience to some degree, and you're in this space of peace and you're in this space of love, and that's where you choose to live. And man, I'm going to live there forever. And then somebody gives you the look. And all of a sudden, when you get the look, the non-being self is resonated into activity. The signal strength changes, takes over, and you just can't help yourself. You're a mad banshee. You're a raging maniac. What happened? What happened is the amplitude, just like the amplitude of the signal that controlled the FM radio, the amplitude of the hostility or fear by that look you got was resonated, intensified, and when it hit a certain level, it took over and you had no control anymore. Forgiveness is what empowers you to go inside and literally weaken the energy fields from the brain cells based in hostility or fear. It's like you're going in each time you've forgiven. You listen to Yeshua and he says, some issues you're going to do 77 times 70 worksheets. Each time you do a worksheet, it's like you're shaving off a little bit of the energy, shaving off a little bit, shaving off a little bit of the energy until the field from that hostile thought becomes so weakened that it cannot get to the amplitude where it takes over anymore. So that's the work of forgiveness. And I know that everybody who's doing the real forgiveness work recognizes times when, gee, I don't want to act this way. I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to do this. And it simply takes over, no matter how many times you choose to do it differently. But as you forgive, when you get to the core of one of those big issues that takes you into that state, you remember the day that somebody gave you the look, and you were almost shocked at yourself because you kind of looked around inside and went, where is that hostile response that usually comes? And you had worked that one through, and it just wasn't there anymore. It didn't have the signal strength, so to speak, to take over. And that's the shift that happens as we move from the non-being state back to a state where we live in being. So this serenity, this energy of love surrounds us totally and completely. Wherever I go, your serenity goes with me. I'm in that field. If I have no ideas that conflict with that, it doesn't matter what happens in my world. I will live in that space. And literally, whatever energy moves in you sprays on everyone around you. And this particular lesson acknowledges that. It sheds its light, this serenity in which I live, move, and have my being. When I become an instrument of its expression, it sheds that light on everyone I meet. I bring it to the desolate, the lonely, and the afraid. Now, the desolate, the lonely, and the afraid oftentimes live in the world of attack. So when they come in their attack mode, can you hold to the space of active love? You know, you look at what's happening in the political realm and all the nastiness and insanity that's going on. That doesn't mean you have to ignore it, but can you be the space of love that sheds that serenity and that light in the direction of the person who's suffering so badly that, you know, maybe they would do something like, we're going to force children away from their parents because they came and violated, we call it, say, violated our borders. Someone with that kind of pain is living in severe trauma to just be able to do that kind of behavior. Now, is it right for us to speak up and say we're going to do something about that, take action? Absolutely. In the meantime, can we do it from a mind connected to the active presence of love and this serenity so that you literally are able to, quote unquote, spray that energy of light, spray that energy of love on the person who's pulling those things? While perhaps speaking up and holding them accountable, literally doing something about it. So we can stand in the space of that presence of love and still take action to change what's going on in the world within us as well as the world around us. So I offer this serenity to those who suffer, to those in pain or grieving for loss, people who think they're bereft of hope or happiness. Send them to me. Bring them to me. It's the idea of this radio show. We're asking that those who are in pain and suffering, who are willing to make a shift, who are willing to take responsibility, willing to acquire the tools that supports their shifting, and then to create that space of support. And, you know, you've seen occasions for every one of us on this show where somebody's brought something that's brought disturbance up in us and opened the space for us to do another piece of work and to move through those hostilities and fears. So the request here in the lesson is asking the Creator, let me bring that serenity with me, for I would be here to support everyone in pain and trauma. And as I do that, I get to reorganize my own self. That is the self that lives in hostility or fear, that is in need of support and healing. So as it goes on, it says, so we go in serenity to all the world. We give that message that we have received. And thus we come to hear that voice for love who speaks to us as we relate to the words of serenity that, you know, oftentimes the world just doesn't get it, just isn't there. So the awakening to that is the focus of lesson 245. So the final thought in this lesson is that when I recognize that love, because we share that love and we share the words that inspire us to move toward that state of love. Powerful lesson there. I can remember when I was younger and I had an issue, and this is one that I've heard from a lot of people. You know, I do pretty well with my temper except when I'm driving. And this was in my son. The resolution for this one came from me, the point where I shifted the critical mass of hostility around driving for me was, well, my son is now almost 40, so he was probably 2. I remember the day it happened, I was holding him on my hip, carrying him, so he was maybe 2, 2.5. And, you know, I could be in most circumstances, and it didn't matter much what people did. I was pretty level and stayed connected, except when driving. And literally, I could be in a fist-shaking rage in a fraction of a second, if anybody can relate to that. And I had worked on that situation consciously, actively, probably 5 years. And one day I did some forgiveness work and dropped into a memory of being abused as a kid. And once I processed through that, there was a total shift. And I mean, literally since then, and before that, I had no control whatsoever driving down the highway. If somebody did something stupid, I mean, it was just, I could stop it fairly quickly, but I'd just be in an instant in that shaking rage. And after that event, after touching into that abuse, and since then, almost 40 years ago, people can do crazy things, and it's easy for me to just say, well, buddy, that looked pretty crazy, but I hope you're safe on the way home, and bless you. You know, it's one of those shifts that, you know, this is really working. This is really where it's at. So, you know, whatever your challenge is, whatever your hostility or fear is, it is forgivable. And remember that the word forgive means remove. I have fear that someone's going to die. Okay? So now, notice that your mind puts the fear on someone dying rather than directly confronting the fact that you have fear. Can you forgive your fear? Can you remove your fear and recognize that your fear isn't about someone dying? Your fear is about the fact that there's fear. Now, when you can come to peace with someone dying, when you can be in that space, then you can stand in that space of peace and serenity, offering that to the person who's perhaps on the edge of death, and it may be the very thing that pulls them back from that edge, or it may be the thing that supports them getting through it easily. Which do you suppose is the better place to be? In a place of serenity around someone cherished who's dying to support them through it consciously? Or being in a place of terror and trauma and holding terror and trauma for them? Which do you suppose would be the nicer gift to give the person who, if they've chosen to leave, is going to leave? Or if they've already left? You know, if there's a person that you think about and you're in grief and pain and trauma every time you think about them, there's your forgiveness work for getting rid of grief and pain and trauma, so that you can come to a place where you can think of them. You know, the fact is they're gone. And if they are, do you suppose you're better off being in a space of serenity and love and being able to send that to them? Or do you suppose you're better off in your trauma? So the next lesson, and this is an important lesson, 246. And, you know, love, the world looks at as a verb, and the Course is written in a way that love is a verb in many cases. Now, there are places where it also says love is what you are. So recognize who you are. Yeah, you either got to recognize that you are love or you do love. You can't. It can't be both. So if I am love, then if I can maintain it, if my essence is love and I can maintain my essence when I think of the Creator, then I'm going to be empowered to do the same when I think of anyone in the world. If I'm living out of a state of being, if I maintain that state of being, then I am love. You know, the Greek translation to the scriptures tell us that this man Yeshua told us we were supposed to love our neighbor. And I offer, we were never told by Yeshua to love our neighbor. That's simply not true. What Yeshua said is, be your essence. Be the love that you are in the presence of each neighbor. Don't give up your human life for some hostility or fear in you that you think about your neighbor, but be that presence of love. So, in essence, what he's saying is if you actually are living as the presence of love, whenever you think of the Creator, then you obviously would be able to do that when you think of the offspring of the Creator, the people in your life. So the lesson goes on, unfolds, and says, let me not think, you know, of course we're looking once again at the regulatory speech. So let me not think that I can find the way to the Creator if I have hatred in my heart. In other words, you know, the scriptural comment is made, can a fountain give forth both bitter water and sweet? No. Can't be done. And so if there's hate in me, then that hate is going to tend to block the presence of active love. So if hate is an issue for me, that may be a place where I have, you know, Yeshua talked about you might do 77 times 70 worksheets around a given issue. That might be an issue where you've got your 77 times 70. So the Course is saying, stop tricking yourself that you can pretend that you love God, but you're peeved at your neighbor. Not going to work. You're peeved at your spouse, your child, your parent, person down the block. Can't happen, because that peeved part blocks the awareness of who we are as love. So it then goes on, and once again, the speech isn't so great, but we'll correct it a little bit. Let me not try to hurt my brother, another aspect of the Creator, and think that I can know my Father, that is, the truth of who the Creator is, or my true self. I need to recognize myself and to recognize that my awareness can contain the presence of love, the essence that I share with my Creator, or for the mind to conceive of all the love of the Creator, that the Creator is, can flow to me. And when it does, then a loop is created which returns that presence of being, that we're connected in this energetic loop of the active presence of love. And so this section today we'll finish with a brief meditation. We'll invite you to just go into a quiet space and take a few breaths. And particularly with this being Labor Day, to recognize that, you know, we live in a world where every human has the same value as every other human. And that initially, and I think there have been some non-human dynamics that have come into the labor movement, but by and large, basically what it's saying is, you know, it's time for us to all recognize that we are all deserving, that we're all part of one essential expression, and that is the expression of love, and that each one deserves to be treated equally and well and taken care of well. And so as you do that, as we go into this, perhaps just holding the space for the recognition, you know, we're in a country right now where the 1% collects over 90% of the wealth while many people starve. And the objective was to uplift those on the starving level to the level where everyone is taken care of. Everyone has, you know, sufficient food to eat, sufficient safety to discover themselves as the presence of love, a shelter, a reasonable shelter over their head, and decent food to eat. And so to hold the space for that, that the 1% who perhaps through greed, for whatever reasons, power person dynamics, that they awaken. I know I listened to a video recently of a man, I think it was called Ethical Millionaires, and this guy's a millionaire, and he's saying, please, government, please tax me more. You don't tax me enough. And of course, those who are living in the greed world said, well, go ahead and pay more money to the government. That's okay, but I'm not going to do it. And his point was, no, that's not my point. I'm saying all of us, we the 1%, taking so much in and leaving so little for others, we all need to participate in this so that there is enough for everyone to be taken care of. So let's just hold the space for that as this Labor Day celebration, its deepest, truest form was to create a safety and a security and a fairness for everyone. And so allow yourself to just take a couple of deep breaths. Creator, I will accept the way you choose for me to come to you. Come with this humble mind, not an ego mind, but rather a mind of humility, a mind that's willing to learn, a mind that's willing to be taught. And I will approach you in that humility where I see the highest and best in myself and others, the Aramaic definition of humility. And then to recognize that by being that, I will succeed because it is the Creator's will that we would all recognize our oneness. When Yeshua said, I and the Father are one, he was speaking about a principle that each one of us is an expression, is the offspring of the divine. And I would recognize that what you will is what I will as well, and only that. And so I choose to be the presence of love for each and every person, even my seeming mortal enemy. Interesting, if you watch this film, Hacksaw Ridge, and in order to escape men firing at him, he ends up in a cave. And back in the cave, he brings his lantern around, and there's a Japanese man who's seriously injured. He's a medic. And this Japanese man, you can see the terror in his eyes. Oh, my God, he's going to kill me. And instead, he reaches out and gives him a shot of morphine to ease his pain and ministers to him. What does human life do? Human life is the active presence of love for every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And so as that idea becomes, as that mind energy becomes intensified so as to penetrate every mind on the planet, then we shift the way this whole game of life is played with each other. And we recognize that there is enough on planet Earth in the way of resources for everybody to have it all. And we need to treat it with integrity and each other with integrity. So that's my take on A Course in Miracles lesson today. Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us?
No, he's not with us today.
Okay. He's probably doing family time with the holiday. I know his sister just went through, I think, a surgery, and so we'll hold her and mom. Tim's mom's been having some challenges as aging moves forward in her life, and so we'll just hold all three of them in our hearts, and perhaps his sons are with him. I'm not sure. I Last I knew, they were in different parts of the country. So I'll hope that whoever's gathering with Tim with this holiday weekend, that they're all blessed, and we'll look forward perhaps to talking to him tomorrow. In the meantime, anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up?
Chat room is really quiet. Chat room's really quiet. Nobody has a hand up. We have 18 minutes, so we've got time to address something. If someone presses one, you're first in line. The only thing I have to share is that I completed with India this morning on the Android app. We have actually found. Our time difference is 9.5 hours, so I either stay up till 2 in the morning or I get up at 6 in the morning. So by the time we got through going back and forth and I gave them the final okay to make it live, and they turned it over to another gentleman in India to add it to the Google site. And after that, then Michael and I found a couple of things that would probably benefit to change. And so I had written to them and asked them if we could go ahead and do that before we went live. But they didn't answer me, so I think I've missed my window on that one, but we've already got changes coming up for the first one. And they're already in the process of working on the iPhone, and so they're making a few changes on that. And I've also asked that gentleman if while he's making those changes, he wanted to make the new ones. But I haven't heard back from any of them, so I'm going to assume at this point that they are probably in bed because it's like 11 o'clock at night for them. But anyway, we'll see what happens on that, but it should go live today. So look for when you do your updates that it will update, and it will have the drag-on Klingon game. And the drag-ons are the feelings that we drag on with us, and the Klingons are the thoughts behind those feelings that cling to us, and it's all about letting it go. And it's a game, and it's for kids, and it goes, instead of having like a 7-step or an 11-step or whatever, it's A to Z. So it has 26 steps, actually, and it's got some visuals, it's got some noises, and I think it's pretty cool. So, like I said, we've got
cool
a few changes.
It's sweet. I got to play the game for the first time this morning live on the app, and, you know, when you speak, for instance, as you're doing it, when the child speaks one of his feelings out loud, hits a button, and the app roars out with this dragon roaring fire, and so it's pretty cool to see what you guys have put together. It's pretty awesome. So, by the way, in India right now, if it's 11 o'clock, the guys who normally would be in the office when you're working with them, actually it's very different culture, and 9, 10, 11, and 12 o'clock are when people are in mass out in the streets, just moving around. I was shocked when I spent time in India, because at nighttime, I mean, people just come out and they mill around the streets and interact with each other. It's like a huge social community thing, quite different than here, quite a different culture. So we can see them, if that's what they're doing, enjoying their social time with their communities and appreciate it for the work they've done to put the app together. Oh, great. Well, let's say hello to our caller.
It's area code 610. You're on the air. Who do we have?
I bet you can guess. Susan Bingham.
Hey, young lady, welcome.
Hi. Welcome to you, too. Delighted. Thanks for coming on Labor Day. And I do want to continue a discussion we started last week about some of the things Bruce Lipton is talking about. I remember you said, call up on Monday, and I'm doing it. So
yes,
my question is, you said beware of premature positive thinking. I went back to look over some of the Lipton material, and he said from ages pre-birth to 7, we are like in a hypnotic state. We are taking in information on how to get along in this environment.
Yep.
We're just learning it, pulling it in. And he said, we don't remember a lot of that programming. We were too young to, our memory might start at age 4 or 5. A lot of the stuff that went in, we can't access. But he says, one way you can identify is not working right is what isn't working right now in your life. If something is very difficult for you, you might figure that there was some programming in there that needs reversing. So
right.
That's what you're doing with the worksheets. Where
that's forgiveness.
We're digging down.
That's it.
Yeah. So
and not necessarily cognitive remembering of the event that happened at two, where, you know,
yeah.
Dad went into a fit of rage and the child just absorbed all this energy of rage, and 30 years later, like I was sharing, when the car, you're cut off by a car, going back into that rage, not necessarily, and for me in that particular experience, it was a cognitive recall, but it's not necessary for it to be cognitive, but to process the energy assault that happened in those early times as forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
and that when you try to plaster over those things with positive thinking, you know, the positive thinking seems to work for a time period, but then when the stress is up and the chips are down, the underlying energy dynamic sooner or later is going to take over. You know, in the scriptures they talked mm-hmm. about, you know, nothing will remain hidden. Everything will be made known in the light of day. So I want to use forgiveness to access, yes, I'm going to positive think, but I'm going to use forgiveness simultaneously to access those underlying energetic dynamics that perhaps will never be cognitive experiences for me, and process through them with the active presence of love.
Michael?
Yes.
A perfect example of that is the story we've told a couple of times about Ryan when he was like 4 years old and the dryer.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so you may have heard it before, Susan, but I'll tell it again for anybody who's listening that hadn't heard it before. My son, we were over at their house one day, and he was talking about that he and his wife had kind of a deal that she did laundry and he did dishes. And he said, I just can't do laundry. He said, every time I start to do clothes, he said, I just fall asleep. He said, it's like I go, you know, unconscious. So Michael was like, you know, was there something traumatic that happened to him around laundry? And I said, well, the only thing I can think of is when he was 3 or 4 and he was at a babysitter's. It was before he was old enough to go to kindergarten or anything. And they didn't have pre-K back then. And so he was at her house, and she kept a lot of kids. And one day she was doing, you know, some towels or clothes or whatever, and didn't realize that when she had transferred clothes from the washer to the dryer, that the cat had jumped into the dryer. And the cat was, you know, all the kids' favorite pet and all that stuff. And she didn't know that until she went to take the clothes out of the dryer, and there was the dead cat. And the kids were, like, in trauma. And Ryan said, you know, when we were relating that, or I was telling Michael about that, and Ryan said, I don't remember that. And I said, well, you were in trauma over it at the time. And Gabby turned around and she says, oh, is that why every time I go to do clothes in the dryer, you say, where's the cat? And he says,
oh, my God.
That never, yeah. And he says, doesn't everybody, don't they always look for their cat, you know, make sure it's not in the dryer? And it's like, no, not really. And so, you know, he still, even after we told the story, didn't remember it happening.
Isn't that something?
It was impacting the way, and after that, he could do laundry. After he was able to process, you know, he didn't remember it. It wasn't cognitive, but it definitely was an input of some information as a child, and impacted the way, when he's 30 years old, the way that he acted.
Isn't that amazing? What a story.
Yeah.
Well, you are right
on. Yeah, such
on,
a perfect example.
You're right on the edge of my question, which has been a persistent question, not just now, but that accessing of the trauma without having access to the actual event.
Right.
You're able somehow to locate or access. How do you access the trauma without a memory to go with it?
Here's how you do it, and this is the genius of Yeshua's forgiveness process and the worksheet. So I'm living my life so as to be the active presence of love, to live as the truth of who I realize I am, my newborn essence love. So I'm walking through life, and all of a sudden I find myself in let's say in this case with Ryan, literally just going unconscious. I mean, he'd start to yawn and he'd fall asleep. He just could not stay awake from that. So I realized, I go, there's something here, much like when I'm driving down the road. And this was, that was an issue that I'd worked on purposely, consciously, for 5 or 6 years before I made that breakthrough that one day. And so I recognize there's something here, and I look at, what's the goal that's driving my mind to build a perception that in one case has me go into rage, or in another case has Ryan going unconscious and going to sleep, not being able to do laundry. I look at that and I look at the goal, and then I cancel the goal. The goal is like a recruiter that's going into the whole energy system and recruiting the data that relates to the circumstance at hand. You know, the functioning purpose of the mind is to show us how to accomplish our goals. So when I load a goal, basically I go in, my mind goes into recruit phase. Okay, you know, let's imagine we're giving a directive to the unconscious. Okay, unconscious, we want to accomplish this. What all do we know about this that will help us to achieve this goal? And so this recruiting of energetic dynamics happens, and those energetic dynamics go into creating our conscious perception. If we recognize that there is a flaw in our conscious perception, i.e., it isn't based in love, it isn't supporting us being vital and living as love, then I'm able to collapse that by canceling the goal that's driving the process. And when I cancel the goal that's driving the process, the whole perceptual construct of my mind is in on myself, on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, that's what gives me access to the underlying dynamic in the doses that I can take it. Now, in a major issue like that one for me of rage behind the wheel of a car, it took me 5 or 6, maybe even 7 years to do that one. And I worked on it consciously, purposely. So I now realize that I would drain off a little bit of energy around it the first time I looked at it consciously, drain off a little more, drain off a little more, drain off. This is a major issue. Now, I look back and I recognize, you know, my father, one of the things that I processed around my dad was him telling me about the life they had as he was raised in the streets of Scotland and in Glasgow, Scotland. And I watched the movie, Streets of New York. And I was like, oh, my God, what a world to have been brought up in and to live in. And that's part of my genetics and part of my heritage. You know, how long, how many generations has that sort of thing been going on? So I realized that until in that particular case for me, by canceling a goal and dropping into the trauma that was underneath that and being able to process through it, there was this unconscious rage that came up. There's an interesting film out there right now. It just came out in the theaters a few days ago. If you haven't seen it, I don't know if you're a movie buff at all, but it's worth going to the theater, making a trip and go and watch this movie, Beautifully Broken. Mm. And it shows how this sweet young girl, good relationship with her family, until the day she's raped.
Mm.
And and she's not able to tell anybody. She feels guilty. It's her fault. And until she has the space to process that, she's in nothing but rage and trauma with her family. Whenever people are in hostility of any kind, it's because underlying it is a trauma. And I can positive think myself to the stars. I can say, I'm going to be loving with this parent. I'm going to be loving. I'm going to be loving. I'm going to be loving. And I get to be more loving. But underlying it, if I don't resolve the rage that causes this attack of the parent, then when the stress is up and the chips are down, and by holding that rage unresolved, I'm going to continuously keep bringing to me an experience that's going to give me the opportunity to process through it. And then when I finally process through it, and, you know, I can only process, you know, everybody wants to storm the gates. I want to be there yesterday, but I can only process through the amount of energy that I have the practice and the strength to handle today. And if I can't handle this major trauma today, I may be able to handle 2 points of 100, and tomorrow maybe 3 points, and the next day maybe 5 points, until I get enough strength and practice that, I can handle 80 points of this. I'm finished with that one. And all of a sudden, that trauma's gone. That response is gone. You can't positive think and make that difference, though.
It makes sense to a certain point, and this is a point that I've come to many times in listening to you talk, and I don't know where the problem is, but when you say give up a goal, okay, well, I'll give you an example for right now. I have a grandson, and it's not the one I've been talking about. It's my youngest one, who has to give a speech tomorrow afternoon at school. It consists of two sentences. He has been so anxious about giving this speech. I mean, that's what he chooses to focus on. He's got anxiety, and he's focusing on this. And so I'm resonating with that, and I'm concerned about him. And I haven't been anxious about it, but I've been very sad and concerned and worried for him, and I know that's not helpful. So I give up the goal of having my grandson not be anxious. I give up the goal of my grandson being successful even and saying his two sentences. I give up those goals. So I've given up the goals, and I feel as if I'm just in a wide open space. Now, at that space, you call it collapsing into something. And I can't quite understand what am I collapsing into? The underlying trauma in my life that would give me sorrow and worry?
Well, notice that your first goal was about him, what he's not going to do.
Yeah, not be anxious.
And that would be the indicator. That would be the indicator that that would probably be one of the places that you want to go, so that you can hold a space where there's some underlying trauma for you that you can't hold the space when facing that goal. As you cancel that goal, and your surface mind, you know, I think about your grandson. I don't know him from Adam's cat or Ryan's cat, but I can think about him, and I can say from this distance, son, I hold a space for you to be totally successful at this presentation that you're going to do.
Yeah.
And I don't have the brain cells or the experience that you have to go, and I don't remember exactly what your words were, your first goal about what he wasn't going to do.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why. Well, no, before you talked about the success, you spoke about what wasn't going to happen.
He wasn't going to be anxious.
About him, that he wasn't going to be anxious. There you go. So there's the anxiety game. So my speech goes to what my perceptual construct and my issue is around anxiety. And so remember that the goal, where you identify the goal in step three in the worksheet, you want to look at the constructive results. So instead of, I don't want him to be anxious, because I can't cancel a goal of him not being anxious, I would cancel the goal for him to have total confidence, because my anxiety is stored in the file in my mind around confidence. So when I cancel the goal for him to be totally confident, that collapses the construct that comes out of my goal, my file, so to speak, on anxiety or on success and confidence, and I get to drop into and look at and process another layer of my anxiety. And now I become a purer space for him and supporting him in having that sort of confidence that I'm holding the space for him to have.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
It makes sense. There's a gut connection still missing, and it's not your fault.
Yep.
I'm working on it, but...
Okay, we're down to the last 10 seconds, so let's continue the conversation tomorrow. Tomorrow, it's an awesome one. Delighted and appreciative. In the meantime, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal lives. Be holy days. Happy Labor Day. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org. whyagain.org.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.